The Masterclass podcast is made on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri, Woiwurrung and Bunurong people. We recognise First Nations people as the original owners and custodians of the lands and waterways across the Australian continent. We pay our respects to elders past and present. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
If you haven't grabbed the reader's attention within the first 10 to 12 words, you lose them. You need to appreciate how unique news writing is. It's really different from any other kind of writing anyone does. News journalists are storytellers, and even though we deal in facts, you've got to be able to write those facts in a way that is interesting to people.
How do you wade through a council website and decide what is worthy of being a story?
To me, there is no boring story. There's just a boringly written story. I'm Saffron Howden. I'm the National Editorial Training Manager at Australian Community Media, or ACM. And today, we're going to give you a masterclass in writing a great news lead.
Hello, and welcome to Season 3 of the Masterclass podcast. I'm Louisa Lim, and I teach journalism and podcasting at the University of Melbourne. Every episode, I'm speaking to a master of journalism to talk about one aspect of their work. Today, we're hearing from Saffron Howden, the National Editorial Training Manager at ACM. That means that Saffron trains a lot of young journalists who then go to work at newspapers across regional Australia. And Saffron, a lot of what you do is basically teaching young journalists how to write in hard news style. I mean, what does that actually mean?
That is true. That is a lot of it. There's a lot of other things as well, like news gathering and a whole lot of ways of producing and presenting news now that all journalists have to be across. But the really fundamental part of it is that news writing and being able to really effectively communicate what has happened on a particular day at a particular time to the audience who couldn't be there. So journalists really fundamentally are the people in court, in council, on the streets who are there when you can't be there because you're at work doing other things and busy, but you want to stay up to date with what's going on in your community and your region and your country, right? So communicating that effectively is fundamental to being a good journalist. And that means working out what information to prioritise, how to write that in a compelling way that not only gets across the sort of key elements of what's happened, but is also a narrative. It's a story. I mean, news journalists are storytellers. And even though we deal in facts, you've got to be able to write those facts in a way that is interesting to people so that they read it, so they can be informed citizens and they can know what's going on in the world. So, yeah, it's a really fundamental part of my job, but it's because it's so key to being a great journalist.
And I mean, how do you know when you're ready to start writing that story? How much research and interviewing should you do?
It really depends on the story. You need to check in with your news values for a start. So is it new? Is it relevant to your audience? Does it involve people who are sort of powerful or have some influence over the people in your community or whatever audience you're writing for? Is it surprising or amazing or weird? Does it just tell something about our society and our community? So you need to check in with those news values and then that should guide you as to the kind of information you need. If it's like a breaking news story, then it might be unfolding, but then you're looking for some basic elements, you know, who's involved, how are they affected, when did it happen, where did it happen, and what are the sort of implications of that, the consequences for your audience, and those are probably the key things you need. But then you move to the really complicated stories where you need to interview dozens of people. It might be an investigation where you've got to dig into data and until you've confirmed it in multiple ways from multiple sources, you're not even close to publishing. So I think with your basic news stories, in terms of sort of what you need to make sure the base structure is there, you need a voice, you need that who, what, when, where, why, how. And once you've ticked those boxes, then you're probably ready to make a start. You may find that you have to come in and fill some gaps later once you've put your fingers to the keyboard. But, you know, once you've answered those who, what, when, where, why, how questions and you've sort of matched that with the news values that are so important.
The most important part of any news story is the lead, the first line. I mean, what is your rule of thumb? How long should that lead be?
Yeah, the lead is so crucial. With early career journalists, you spend a lot of time crafting your ability to and reinforcing your ability to write a great news lead. And there's a reason why they're so talked about in journalism. Because if you haven't grabbed the reader's attention within the first 10 to 12 words, you lose them. And your story could be the most important thing that has happened for the past 10 years or 20 years or the whole century, whatever it might be. And if you haven't managed to convey how important your story is within the first paragraph, then already you're sort of failing, which is a terrible way to say it. But for journalism to be effective, people have to consume it, right? So making sure that it's as readable as possible is so important. And of course, your entry point to that is your lead, is your intro. There are always exceptions to the rule, but in general, you don't want to go over about 25 words with an intro. And your first 10 to 12 words are pretty key in making sure that people are going to keep reading.
So talk me through some of your cardinal rules about leads, about, you know, those first 10 to 12 words, what should be in them, what tense you use, you know, all those important rules that you teach young journalists.
There is quite an art to it. And I think just to backtrack really slightly before I answer that question, you need to appreciate how unique news writing is. It's really different from any other kind of writing anyone does, including in the nonfiction world. It's definitely a style of writing that gets a lot better with practice. So everyone should take some comfort from that. Once you practice enough, you can get really good at it. But just understanding in the first place that it is so different from any other style of writing, it's summarising sometimes incredibly complex information with a whole lot of different strands from all different places, prioritising that, and then giving it to people with limited time and limited attention spans in a really condensed way that they're going to retain that and use that in their lives somehow, whatever way that might be. So just with that in mind, I think there are a few things to remember when you're writing your intro. One of the biggest mistakes that I see people make time and time again, and not just early career journalists, is that they lead with what I call the agent. So to give you an example, so many stories lead with the federal government has announced, or the state government has announced, or council has passed a motion that, etc. So leading that whole important intro to get people interested in the story with the least interesting part of it, which is just the agent who's sort of making this decision. What readers care about is how that decision or announcement will affect them. Because journalism is the ultimate communication about community. So leading with the people affected and how it's affected them rather than just the body that happened to make the decision.
I mean, just to follow up on that example that you gave, you know, instead of saying the council has announced new recycling bins, what would be your lead?
Well, I would definitely say, you know, residents are going to get bigger, better recycling bins under a new council initiative. So the council's still in there. The audience cares about their bins. They don't care who made the decision. Although we as journalists have to include that information, it doesn't mean we should prioritise it. Because to get people interested, they want to know what's going to happen with their bins. So that's the most interesting bit to lead with. In a similar vein, getting caught up in the process is another way to sort of ruin your lead. So where police are investigating something, or so-and-so has appeared before court. Police investigate every single day. It's literally their job. So it's not very interesting to say that police are investigating it. Might be important to the story as a whole, but is that the thing you lead with? Probably not. Probably more interesting is the crime that's happened, you know, that they're investigating. Same goes with so-and-so's appeared before court. Again, people appear before court every day. If you're writing a story about it, it's probably because of the nature of the crime. So you'd be wanting to lead in with that.
I worked in the newsroom of the BBC World Service for a long time, and we had a general rule that you were not allowed to write a lead saying, you know, President Joe Biden met so-and-so today, because a meeting is so boring. What we need to know is what happened in that meeting.
Exactly.
And I think that's exactly what you're saying, right?
Absolutely. That's precisely it. Yeah, two people coming together for a meeting, someone going to court, police being on scene at an accident. Well, yeah, really? Tell us about the accident. Was someone injured? Was someone hurt? Is the road closed? Those are the things that make that story interesting, not the fact that the police were involved, because as I said, that's their job.
What about tense and sort of time details? How should you deal with them?
So the other thing I see a lot of is journalists dating their stories very quickly. In the world of digital news storytelling, it's so different from the way people used to consume news. So for your listeners here, back in the olden days, when people read newspapers, they always knew that they were reading yesterday's news today. Everything was in past tense when you wrote for print because everyone knew they were reading about stuff that had already happened. In the digital world, stories hang around for a long time, or at least much longer. They might be read next week, they might be read next month, they might come up in a search result 2 years from now. And so you're immediately dating it if you use time references in your intro. So if you start saying, this happened yesterday, you're automatically saying to the reader or the audience, this is old news. And you still need to make sure your story is robust and contains all the information. So you definitely want to put the date that something has happened, but that can go further down in the story. You don't need those time references in any way, shape or form in the intro. So I prefer, and what I tell the journalists that I mentor and train, is to opt for perfect tense. And perfect tense is great because it doesn't require a time qualification. So perfect tense, to give you an example, is the library has closed. So you don't have to say the library closed last Wednesday, which is in past tense. And the import of the story is still that this library has closed, but you don't need to put a date on that. It closed last Thursday, thereby dating the story. So I opt for perfect tense in the intro, and then I'd put the date further down in the story to ensure that your story has integrity and that people can check the details, but you don't need that anywhere near an intro.
And another thing I see a lot of is people using very long titles, you know, the assistant deputy commissioner of police for Ballarat City today said, blah, blah, blah. What do you tell people who do that?
Yes, that's another one. You don't want to clutter your intros with really long titles like you've just given examples of, and proper nouns and names of organisations and that kind of thing. So it's better to opt for sort of catch-all terms in your intro. And then further down in the story, you can put those full titles, again, for the integrity of your story. You've got to make sure you are actually telling people the information they need and using the proper titles. Again, you don't need that in an intro. So I would opt for things in an intro like, you know, authorities, experts, doctors, officials, that kind of thing. And then when you need to attribute whatever's happened or the report or the quotes or the, you know, whatever event it is, then you put that full title further down in the story and you work it into the narrative. It's a big turnoff, you know, in an intro to sort of just start the whole thing with a really long title.
I mean, let's talk about examples. You wrote this story for the Blue Mountains Gazette about all the animals that have been legally culled by farmers, and you used a database to find that story. I mean, I guess there's a huge amount of information in a database. How did you narrow that down to a story and then a lead? Can you just talk us through that process?
This story was about a state government authority giving licenses to landholders, mainly in regional and rural areas, to kill and remove native animals for whatever reason. Sometimes it was, you know, because they competed with their livestock for water sources or pasture. Sometimes it was because they damaged property. So in that story, I was working off a database, quite a numbers heavy story. And the intro, of course, is really important in such a complex story to get across the very key, like the essence of this story, you know? And that's quite hard to sort of work through all the data and all the things going on to get there. So I'll read that intro for you. Landholders and residents were licensed to shoot 1.9 million kangaroos and cull or remove more than 200,000 other native animals, including emus, kookaburras and rainbow lorikeets over 5 years in New South Wales. So first of all, I'm leading not with the government body that allows people to do this. This is fundamentally a story about animals being killed, and they don't just fall out of the sky and die. They're killed by someone, right? So I'm leading, the very first words are landholders and residents, because this is about the people doing that. And then I'm picturing it for the reader. So I wanted to make sure my intro included kangaroos, emus, kookaburras, rainbow lorikeets, things that would actually bring a picture to people's minds of what animals were being killed. The body that does this licensing is the New South Wales National Parks and Wildlife Service. I don't think I mentioned them in the full title till about par 11 in this story. The key to this was the animals and the reasons why this was happening and how many were being killed. And obviously I needed the agent, but I didn't actually put in the full title till par 11 or 12 in this story.
And do you have a rule about nut grafts as well?
Yeah, so I did my cadetship at AAP and they taught us, so that's Australian Associated Press, that you must back up your lead with a quote and evidence within the first three or four parts of the story. So one thing I see quite often is people, they feel like they have to put a whole lot of background in and then get to the point. Obviously in news, you get straight to the point in hard news, so that's in the first par. But then you've got to sort of give people some, why are we talking about this and what's the evidence for this? And that's got to come quite high up in the story, even if you flesh out the details of that further down.
I always think of the nut graph as the why does this matter par. You said normally there's a quote within the first three to four pars. Is that what you still go by?
Yeah, that's the rule of thumb. I mean, there's always exceptions to the rule again, but you definitely wouldn't want to leave it a long time until you've had a quote in a straight news story. They've got to be quite high up to bring that human voice to it and to attribute the information that you're using for the story to someone right from the start.
So people always talk about show, don't tell. I mean, what does that mean to you?
It's a really important one. To put it in another way, it's kind of painting a picture for people rather than just a statement of boring fact. So, for example, a lot of ACM mastheads, they're in regional cities around Victoria and New South Wales and Tasmania. And so there's quite a lot of community stories involved with local news. I see too much in the world generally of the local men's shed has received a generous grant of $10,000. So that's telling rather than showing.
So, I mean, instead of writing that, would you be writing something like the local men's shed is going to buy five new, I don't know, saws or whatever they do. I've got no idea, African drums or whatever.
Absolutely. So you want to kind of show it to people instead. $10,000 is meaningless, right, in this particular hypothetical context. What does that mean to anyone? And also you've got to bring the people into that again because people care about people. So the men's shed is kind of an entity. It's a bit amorphous. What's a men's shed? Whereas if you say something like, older men who love to tinker and talk will build a new shed to make chairs and tables for sick kids thanks to a new $10,000 grant. That's showing rather than telling, and it's painting a picture for people, so it's much more real and it's more engaging and people will care about it more, which is what you want people to do when you've written a story.
A lot of local news stories, particularly council stories, can be quite boring. How do you wade through, you know, a council website and decide what is worthy of being a story and what is not?
You're right. Council stories can be very dry. To me, there is no boring story. There's just a boringly written story. So you can have a council business paper. You're going through it as a local reporter. You're looking for what might be a story. You're applying your news values for a start. How many people does this affect? Is it surprising or new or unusual or amazing? You know, does it involve someone who's important in the community and therefore affect other people? And then what you're doing is you're tuning into your audience. One habit that journalists can form, they sit in newsrooms, they talk to other journalists and they talk to editors and they talk to officials and they talk to politicians. And you always have to be reminding yourself of your audience. And so if you're coming across some item in the council business paper, you're looking for things that affect people. And that's how you make it interesting. So if you've got a story about the library being refurbished, the local library, you could write a story saying the local library is going to be refurbished under a development application before council, and no one would read that story. Or you could write the civic centre is going to be transformed with a new central walkway and pergola, and we'll get a new library as part of plans before council. And suddenly we're talking about something much more interesting.
Yeah, so can you give us a bit of a primer as to how a student would go about writing a story based on a press release if you've got, you know, not a lot of time, you're not necessarily able to go out and talk to people?
Yeah, it's a great question, because all journalists every day are getting press releases that have genuine stories in them. But what you don't want to do, obviously, is just sort of change around the language a bit and basically rewrite the press release. So you would never do that, right? Even when you're under the pump, that's a huge no-no. You've always got to remember that press releases are written from someone's point of view, and they don't have the audience and the people in mind. They've got their boss or their, you know, the politician or the body, and they're trying to present themselves in the best light or whatever. So if you take a sort of standard like council press release, for instance, it's going to say, council's awesome for doing this, this and this. And you're looking for the bits that might surprise people or interest them or change their lives or affect their lives. And so whenever you're reading a press release like that, those are the first things you look for. So say you've got, you know, a press release about some new tourism initiative or something like that. You're looking for how that might affect local businesses, how many more visitors it might bring to the region, the trickle-down effect of that, whether there would be any disruption to residents or their services as a result of that. Or maybe there's just something brand new that your city has never had before. So I think it's the similar advice I would give to kind of, you know, reading through a council business paper to how I would read through a press release, which is, what in this actually affects people and in what way is it going to do that? And that's our job as journalists, to bridge that gap between the bureaucracy and real people and make sure that we're keeping the real people in mind when we write our stories. If you're going to do a good job, though, there's always a few follow-up calls, even if you're under the pump. Don't assume that if you're a, you know, brand new cadet journalist and your editor gives you a press release, that means that the story begins and ends with that press release. Fundamentally, journalists must be curious. So if something leaps out at you in a press release, do make some calls, even if it's just to clarify information.
So just to sort of sum everything up, what are your two top tips for students writing in hard news style?
Two top tips would have to be, get rid of process. Focus on the essence, the thing that people are going to care about, and keep it simple would be my other one. Don't try and pack too much into an intro. If you find yourself trying to write, you know, bring in three different ideas and points into one sentence as your intro, get rid of the two that are of lesser importance and stick to one and make that really count.
Very good. Thank you. And I think that you've got a task for us.
Yes, so what I would love all of you to do is to go and look up stories on three different news websites, browse through them, find a lead that you think ticks all the boxes that we've talked about today, really nails that sort of finding the essence, isn't cluttered, not focused on process, getting the tense right, and draws you in immediately. And then as you browse, find one that you think misses the mark and think about why it misses the mark and do that really consciously.
Good lead, bad lead.
Exactly, if you want to summarise it, yes.
That was Saffron Howden, the National Editorial Training Manager with Australian Community Media. The Masterclass is produced by Dylan Bird and myself. It's edited by Dylan Bird. Sound design and post-production by John Tia. The original concept is by Anders Furs. The theme tune is by Susie Wilkins, and it was partially funded by the GEM Scott Trust. And it's brought to you from the Centre for Advancing Journalism at the University of Melbourne.